need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to Nature Back Podcast, where we are talking with entrepreneurs and investors about the green future. Today, my guest is an author and digital nomad, Danny Flood. Danny, tell us in a few words, what is a digital nomad? How did you end up living on the road?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, thank you for asking. I started as a nomad about 15 years ago, around 2008, probably last year of university. And like many others, I read the book, The 4-Hour Workweek, around that time. I kind of had like an existential crisis where after university, I had to face the prospect of 40 years in a cubicle, which wasn't very attractive to me. So I set out to forge my own path. And I'm from San Diego, California, which is a very nice place. But I started taking trips south of the border to Mexico. I started living in another culture where I didn't really speak the language. I picked up Spanish pretty quickly. But I learned for the first time how to take a bath with a bucket of water, you know, for example. And if I wanted to have a hot bath, I would heat it up on the stove and then, you know, use a pail to bathe it over my head. And so now 15 years later, and my lifestyle hasn't changed very much. I've been around 40 countries or so and 5 continents. And now I'm in Pokhara, Nepal. And I just took a bath in a waterfall about an hour ago. So I guess you wanted to ask, you asked me how did I get started, right? Or was that yes. a good introduction? You want to know more about the business side of things?
I mean, also, you know, starting as a nomad in the university, what do you do to make a living? I mean, we would all be happy to travel around the world and see beautiful places, but you somehow have to sustain that lifestyle.
I mean, I learned from a lot of the Greek Stoic philosophers that if you want to be wealthier, part of the equation is reducing the number of things that you want, the number of things that you need. So I think a big part of it was becoming a minimalist. And, you know, I have nothing except what fits in a carry-on bag and my backpack. So basically my laptop, my phone, and a bundle of clothes. You know, if you know the 80-20 rule, I mean, you probably wear like 4 or 5 pairs of clothes, like 90% of the time, at least, you know. So it's been a very like simple lifestyle, but also fun and profitable and basically doing what I want. In the early days, I had a car and a surfboard, so I had a little bit more. And so I would drive around and take road trips like around Mexico. I also traveled across Mexico on a bicycle, and I've traveled a whole bunch of countries on a motorcycle as well, you know, with just the same kind of luggage, you know, just a single pack in my backpack. I've traveled across Thailand and Vietnam on a motorcycle, for example. I've hitchhiked across India. A lot of adventures like this. And so I think that, you know, when you want less, you also become wealthier. I think that's part of the equation. I think that in the US, we're kind of indoctrinated to be locked into this system of debt and everything, where we get like $200,000 of student loans, you know, when we're 20 years old that we can't afford to pay off, and car payments and phone payments. And so I just kind of decided that I want to do away with all of that stuff. And that's kind of when I booked my first one-way ticket, it was to South America. And I was living in Buenos Aires and kind of figuring everything out there. I studied tango dancing and I was doing marketing services. I was doing like freelance marketing for clients back then. I had a marketing agency and I had clients back in the US. And I've tried a whole bunch of stuff these last 14 years. So it depends how much time you got. But yeah, I
What
mean,
is
I guess the thing is, I'm the kind of guy that I wake up every morning and I'm just like, I forget about the past. I'm just like ready to do whatever's I want to do today, you know? So it's like if I fail at something yesterday, I'm just going to get up and try something new today, you know? It's just I just keep tinkering at stuff.
But these days, what would you say? What's your kind of core? What makes you, in addition to, seeing new places, what makes you tick professionally?
What makes me tick professionally?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good question. I think as entrepreneurs and founders, I mean, a lot of us have like kind of ADHD and kind of we want to do what's interesting to us. And sometimes we start something with a lot of enthusiasm, then we kind of lose interest after a while. And I'm certainly guilty of that myself, which is why I've really tried hard to create systems in my business. And I really got into growth hacking about several years ago, probably 7, 8 years ago. And I've really worked to create lifestyle businesses that I only have to work like a couple hours a day, maybe. And this was no exception when I started a growth hacking business. We had like 60 Instagram accounts that we were managing for clients. And I was able to automate a lot of the processes and the work. So I'm really passionate about automation and technology and artificial intelligence. I have a course website where I teach a lot of this stuff called the School of Growth Hacking, where we show everything that we do in our businesses, the growth hacking side of things. We also have courses on viral content marketing and public relations, as well as artificial intelligence, growth hacking, and so forth. So I think that technology is really the enabler that allows us to enjoy these lifestyles that we enjoy. I mean, you're in Barcelona, I'm here in Nepal, and you know, this would have never been possible like 20, 25 years ago.
Yeah, and to record a podcast, I mean, it's probably, yeah, I have to agree on you. It would have been totally impossible when I was younger and you were younger. You talked about the technology. You're currently writing also a book about the AI. How do you see the kind of AI changing the world? Many people are talking about the end of the world. The machines are taking over. We will be dumb and die, and they will kill us all. What's your take on the kind of AI influence on the humankind?
Well, if it's going to be the end of the world, I probably won't care anyway because I'll be dead. So, you know, death offers a sort of peace, I guess. As I say, rest in peace. But I prefer to think of it positively and think about, you know, how we can use AI and technology to create a lifestyle of freedom and abundance. And I think that anytime that we're approaching something like this from a place of fear or even like a mild sense of terror, then we're kind of coming from the wrong place. And I really think that I think that what we get from AI is kind of a reflection of what we have in our own minds. You know, I mean, AI doesn't really have a will of its own. It basically manifests, well, not yet. It basically does whatever you tell it to do. And at this time, I think that it's kind of like the discovery of fire in a sense, like in terms of how important it is. And we all understand that the implications are very large, but we haven't found all the practical applications for it. And so as a growth hacker and someone who's trying to innovate in this space, I mean, that's where I kind of tinker and try to find the practical applications and so forth. And we teach this to people in our community. And I've always been a person that's very methodical. I like to create systems that are, you know, that are proven and reliable. So that's what I try to teach people, like try to teach people how to use the technology in a way that can transform their lives.
So today there is still a strong human element, which is kind of, I don't know, protecting us from the machines taking over. Yeah, I mean, in a way, right? But at the same time, of course, you know, for the growth hacking community and the growth hacking world, of course, AI is a great enabler and, you know, allows to cut the costs or the human factor in the processes to almost bare minimum.
Yeah, it's a good question. And honestly, like sometimes I feel like does the AI actually make life easier for people or does it make life harder? Because now, I mean, there's so much like AI content that you can create in like 5 seconds that it kind of raises the bar a bit, you know, in terms of, I've always been the type of person that I want a lifestyle business. I want my business to be like easy. I want it to be fun. I want it to be profitable. And so there's a sense of like business minimalism there. And anytime when I have to be doing too much, it's kind of like the kiss of death. You know, if I have to be publishing like 5 articles a day or something, that's a fantastic recipe for getting burnt out, even if you're using AI. And so when it comes to technology, I have, you know, virtual servers I run in the cloud. I like to set things up that are kind of set it and forget it, in a sense.
The AI is something which is, of course, puzzling me, and I'm sure a lot of people who are listening also. And of course, the key question related to NatureBacked should be, the, you know, how can we use AI to, you know, preserve this planet in a habitable form? Do you have any good tips?
Yeah, well, it's a really good question. First of all, I want to say that, you know, I'm here in Nepal for the second time. And I think that you know, people might say like Nepal is a poor country, right? But I think that people here know more about self-sustenance than we in developed countries ever would. You know, they if there was a zombie apocalypse or if the grid was knocked off or something, they would probably be able to survive a lot longer than those of us in Europe or United States. And cash is basically just an extra bonus for them, basically, any cash they get from tourism. And so there's really a lot to be learned from, you know, embracing a simple lifestyle, a lifestyle close to nature. For me, that's absolutely critical. I suffer if I'm in front of a screen for too long. And unfortunately, I am, as part of my work, I spend, and I'm trying to spend more time in nature. But I think that in terms of AI, at least for human development and human growth, I think that it's kind of helpful when we kind of AI kind of like do the difficult tasks for us and allow us to become more human and to enjoy an abundance of time and a wealth of freedom.
For the humankind, there are great potentials to have an impact. Thinking about the little bit wider, the humans' relations to the planet and the planet we have been destroying with our, how to say, global lifestyle of economies or the global economy, economic growth drives. Is there a way we could somehow hack the climate
using AI?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm sure
I'm just thinking out loud here, of course, but...
Yeah. Well, I'm certain that there's a possibility. I don't know if we've gotten there yet. I'm sure you're familiar with Peter Diamandis' work, right?
Yeah.
He's got quite a bit to say about that, and there's certainly been some ideas being floated around out there. I do think that it's a problem that artificial intelligence will be able to help us to solve. I don't think that we're there yet, but I think that amazing things will come by 2040. So I choose to be optimistic. But I also learned from the last almost 15 years now that human beings, we don't really need a lot to be happy and to enjoy our lives. And in places like this, like Bhutan and Nepal and northern India, they kind of show us another way. You know, like Bhutan, they don't measure the gross domestic product, for example. They measure the gross happiness product, I think it is. or quotient. So, you know, happiness can come from just embracing a lifestyle of one that's not based on perpetual economic growth, but, you know, here people live close to nature. You know, you can walk and you're swimming in a waterfall, or you can go 60 meters and swim in a lake or whatever. And so people have really embraced that lifestyle here.
Yeah, it's you know, shocking for me that I couldn't reach you on LinkedIn because you were, you know, in the waterfall at the time. It's the challenges of the, you know, 21st century. But it somehow nicely puts a picture on the kind of different lifestyles of this world, and also to your comment about how these nations will be probably surviving longer in the case of apocalypse.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's nature as an antidote, and I try to make it a point to reconnect with nature every day, especially with the kind of work that I do. I kind of feel like it takes a little bit out of me, you know, to be working on the computer and to be coding, you know, for several hours, or, you know, working on my website or whatever it happens to be. I do feel like that's not the natural state of things. I always try to get outside. I've published a course called a Sleep Hacking Masterclass, and I've published a book called Hack Sleep. And I learned a lot about the circadian rhythm, for example, and how important it is to be outdoors and to synchronize your body clock and your circadian rhythm, you know, to get sunshine every day. And I think that that's kind of where human beings are meant to be. To be outdoors, and I try to do as much of my work outdoors as I can. You know, when I'm writing, for example, I write books and courses, and I'll just go out for a walk at the park or something, and I'll transcribe everything on my phone. I don't like being in an office. I don't like being behind a desk. And I think that nature is something that heals us, and it's something that I feel more creative when I'm, you know, walking on the beach or walking in a forest, and I feel more alive. Then
absolutely, and I think sleep hacking is quite a you know, challenge for our generations and our world. My best story about sleep hacking comes from maybe 10 years ago or something like that, when I was running a panel at the Finnish health tech annual event. And the panelists were all sleep specialists. There was a sleep technology guy, there was a sleep professor, and somebody, the third person. And I started off the panel with a question: how many hours did you guys sleep last night? And the answers were, you know, from 5 to 6 hours, I think. So I asked for the technician at the venue to switch off the lights and asked everybody to be quiet, and we can solve the problem here together. Unfortunately, they didn't fall asleep in silence for very long, but at least we run the panel in the darkness, so everybody could, you know, put their sleep, visualize their sleep challenges.
Yeah, I think it's a product of that monkey mind and high cortisol production. You know, we're chronically overstressed all the time, and that's really not how human beings are meant to be. You know, when we have cortisol being produced in our brain, it's meant to help us to solve a difficult task. Like if we're encountered by a wild animal or something, to get out of that situation in, you know, like 15, 20 minutes and then go back to a normal state. And unfortunately, we're all like chronically overstressed, where we're producing cortisol all of the time. And so it's really not natural. It really takes a toll on people's performance and their ability to get proper relaxation.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
I'm sure your book gives a lot of answers to that, but can you give to our listeners a short version of how to get rid of this extra production of cortisol?
Okay, well, it's kind of a complex topic, and I have to preface that I'm not. But I do have a course called Hack Time, where I, in conjunction with sleep hacking, I try to help people to perform their best. and to get more done, to be 10 times more effective and efficient. And so the book, Birth of the Superhuman, which I'm launching soon, is kind of a holistic culmination of these different kinds of topics to help you perform better, to help you be happier, to be more efficient, more effective, and also improve your sleep. And so cortisol, it's known as the stress hormone. And there are a lot of natural ways to counteract cortisol. You know, cold exposure, for example, taking an ice bath. That's one of the reasons why I go out and swim in the river every day in the ice cold water. It really helps to relax us. Listening to relaxing music, singing songs, dancing. Actually, I have a whole list of things you can do to, let me see if I can pull it up here. Give me a second.
We can add it to the, we can also add it to the show notes. So when the episode is published, if you have published.
Yeah, I've got a whole list actually. Mm-hmm. It's for like leaders to perform their best. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So it's a blog post that I wrote, 14 strategies for leaders to cope in high stress situations. And all of these are designed to help you to reduce cortisol, to perform better, to relax. So there's a number of things like personal practices that I try to do every single day. I think that as an entrepreneur, it's a very stressful environment that we're constantly exposing ourselves to, you know, like high risk, high stress, high pressure. And so these are like a set of personal practices that I try to do every day because as an entrepreneur, like I am used to waking up and then, you know, getting an email that I don't want to get or having something being rejected or having a customer cancel their contract or failing at something or the website's broken, you know, constant like bullets flying past your head. And so the first thing is I try to get a lot of sunlight throughout the day. Like as soon as I wake up, sunlight produces serotonin. And I try to get a lot of sunlight during the middle of the day because that's when the sunlight is at the strongest. I also try to get some kind of movement every day, some kind of exercise. Our bodies are built to move and our bodies and brains balance themselves through movement. And it also helps to release a lot of stored tension. Third, I mentioned, you know, spend time close to nature, appreciating the natural abundance. Fourth is breathing exercises. So breathing exercises help you to stimulate your vagus nerve. Sometimes I will do some squatting actually because that forces me to breathe into my gut and not through my shoulders and chest. To kind of purify my gut and detoxify, I'll take long, deep breaths, holding for 20 seconds and slowly exhaling. Every day I'll do fasting, for example, and fasting really helps me to stay focused. So I probably usually don't eat until like 1 or 2 in the afternoon, and that helps me to be a lot more focused in the mornings when I'm working. Six, listening to the sound of birds singing helps to reduce stress. And you can even do this on YouTube, even if you're not in the countryside. Seven is walking barefoot in nature. You go to a field where you can walk on some grass, or if you're near the ocean, you can walk in the sand. Eighth is try to limit or reduce exposure to whatever it is that's bringing you down. So if you're having a crisis with your website, try to focus on something else that you could do productively. anytime, I speak from experience with that one. And often we find ourselves in this loop where we get a trigger and it sets this impulse that can constantly gets us down every time. So we have to reduce our exposure to the trigger. Nine, like disconnect, you know, reduce the time you spend on social media. I think that's pretty obvious. I do that often on the weekends. 10 is self-love. So I, you know, tell yourself that you love and accept yourself even as imperfect as you are. And maybe, you know, write down positive things about yourself that you can remind yourself about. And 11, you know, write down I'm enough somewhere where you can see it and remind yourself of that often. And remind yourself of, as a privilege and a joy to serve other people with your work, for example. 12, listen to your favorite songs to sing to or to dance to or to both. 13, listening to guided meditations. So I noticed that when I play like guided meditations on YouTube from like Paul McKenna or Marissa Peer or Dare to Do Motivation, In the mornings, I'll listen to that for about 30, 45 minutes. I always have better days. I have more productive days when I listen to those in the morning. And there's a lot of free guided meditations on YouTube. And then 14, have a good conversation with a friend or a like-minded positive person. I noticed that when I spend time around people I like who like me, it gives me this new sense of energy, and I feel motivated again. So there's a whole list. I know it's a long answer, so sorry for
No,
that.
no worries at all. And to all those points about the meditation and the breathing and the exercises, I mean, you are starting a yoga retreat now, right?
Yeah, so here's the thing. I'm about to start a 3-week yoga retreat next week, and I'll be doing yoga from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. For 3 weeks, 6 days a week
Wow.
here in Nepal. And the reason I had the idea for this was because I started hosting retreats for entrepreneurs, and we've hosted two in Greece in the last year. And so I'm planning to host more of these retreats, kind of where people can come, like remote workers and entrepreneurs, and just kind of work and disconnect in a beautiful location in the Mediterranean. And so I want to offer more programs and services to the people who come to these retreats. So I kind of got this idea to become to get yoga training certification as well. So to offer to our guests.
Impressive dedication.
Yeah,
So,
I mean, I kind of want to teach people like this more simplified lifestyle, you know,
of
where
course.
they I knew I never wanted to be a part of the rat race, and so I want to help more people to get out of it
Yes, can totally agree with that. The challenge for us is,
as
of course, that we cannot publish the episode during the 3 weeks because you cannot share it to your social media while doing yoga.
well. I can share it. I will be free from 7 p.m. afterwards, so.
You should stay away from the social media, right? For the all the for all the lessons you've just shared. But anyway, from the reader's perspective, we will add a link to the list of the if they forgot something about how to sleep better. We will add a list to the show notes. We will add a list to your kind of upcoming book when it's published. What are and in addition to yoga retreat, what are the next challenges on your? I mean, you probably wouldn't like to call them challenges, but the next great things which you're looking forward during the, you know, next half a year or a year.
Well, that's a good question. We plan on hosting more of these retreats, and I kind of want to introduce people to, you know, this new way of lifestyle, this new life, and you know, kind of help them to simplify their lives. Like we have these retreats in Messenia in the Peloponnese in Greece, and we have this big house. Next year we'll have two houses with 11 bedrooms, and people can come there for a month or even 2 months, and just work in a beautiful location. We have like a big balcony with a hammock and couches and a desk with like 12 chairs. So it's a perfect place for people to just kind of come and disconnect and live close to the sea. And we got the mountains all around. And you know, you can work as much or as little as you want. So I do want to host more of these retreats. And I also have my site, schoolofgrowthhacking.com. We've been featured on AppSumo. So I want to grow that as well and grow our community. We have about 2,000 students now. Continue to serve that community. We also have a number of webinars that we do every month on topics like artificial intelligence and how you can use artificial intelligence to become more productive. And then I also have this book launch. So I one of my goals was always to have a I probably have about 10 books that I've self-published myself, but I wanted to have a traditional publisher for one of my books. So that's the goal with this next one, The Birth of the Superhuman. And it's just basically helping people to unlock a new level of performance and to create that freedom through this holistic system that I've developed that blends like proven practices, technologies, AI, and systems to unlock greater levels of creativity and productivity and potential.
Danny, as a digital nomad, do you actually have a home?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I believe that home is wherever you make it. And I think that anywhere it can be home. I think that home is a place that feels familiar to you, a place that feels comfortable. And when I travel, I go to new places, and there's all this novelty, and it feels like life speeds up. It's so exciting, but it also strips away your comfort zone. And so I think that home is where you feel like you can just relax, you can kind of lower the armor. You feel like you're in a comfort space, the people that you love around you. And so anytime that you have those ingredients, I think that you have a good home.
Do you think the do the digital nomads often have a physical home? Like, I don't know, the house, apartment, whatever, where they keep most of their belongings, or do people you meet on your travels actually, live in the backpack?
Well, that's a good question. I know that a lot of, I personally, I have some things at my mom's house that I left there several years ago, like a surfboard and a bicycle. But I think it's kind of like layers of an onion, the more that you travel, I mean, you shed things that are not important to you anymore. And so you kind of arrive at a place where you're at your core and you understand what your values are and what really matters to you. And I think that, especially in 2023 with all the technology and social media, like we're constantly inundated, we're constantly having our attention stripped away from us. We're focusing on things that are thousands of miles away. And I think that leads to a lot of that stress that you mentioned and a lot of unhappiness, a lack of focus and kind of a lethargy where we don't really feel like we have a purpose in life. And I think that traveling, booking a one-way ticket somewhere, where you're kind of like reborn as a baby and you have to figure everything out all over again, you can really try to connect and understand what's really important to you.
Good stuff. Thanks, Danny, for this discussion, and enjoy the yoga retreat. That sounds amazing. I'm sure many of our listeners will be also Googling how to find the few-week yoga retreats in faraway locations.
Yeah, I would like to encourage more people to come to Nepal as well. It's a lovely country. It's raining quite hard today, but normally it's really beautiful. I came here about 3 or 4 years ago and totally fell in love with the country. I was like, wow, I need to stay here longer. Most people come here to do like trekking, like they want to go to Everest Base Camp or Annapurna, so they'll come for like 7 days or 10 days. But I would really encourage people to stay longer, and this place really kind of grows on you. You can kind of absorb the local culture and lifestyle, and it's also very inexpensive here. It's a great place to remote work, but there's not really a lot of remote workers here. So, it's quite easy to live on, $500, $600 a month here because it's so inexpensive.
Yeah, and from the climate perspective, of course, if you have to fly to Nepal to do a one-week climbing exercise, it makes absolutely no sense. Go for longer.
Yeah, I agree.
Good. Thanks, Danny.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
Bye-bye.
Welcome to Transforming 45, the podcast that celebrates the incredible power of passionate voices. I'm your host, Lisa Boat. Join me in conversation with heart-led humans who share their deeply personal stories of transformation. Transforming 45 is here to uplift, connect, and remind you that it's never too late to write your next chapter. So get ready to be inspired, empowered, and transformed. Join me in this community where through powerful storytelling, we heal and reclaim our inherent magic.
Electric Acid. Hey there, fabulous souls. I'm Stephanie Bathlaan.
And I'm Eden Alpert.
And we're the hosts of the brand new podcast, Unapologetically Fab.
Get ready to join us on an amazing and real journey as we dive into life after 40 and own it.
We're all about changing the narrative, leaning into who you are, and living a life by your own design.
Join us as we embrace life unapologetically and redefine success.
This is Unapologetically Fab,
an Electric Cast production.
See you there.
Electric Acid.